One of the only supplements I take every day without fail is essential amino acids. And that is because when you're deficient in essential amino acids, which most women are, that can cascade into long-term issues because they're vital for muscle protein synthesis, tissue repair, and nutrient absorption. So if you're a woman in her 30s or older like me, and you're worried about age-related muscle loss, as little as 3 grams of essential amino acids per day is going to be the easiest way to support muscle maintenance. Kianaminos is my fundamental supplement for fitness. I personally have been taking Kianaminos capsules daily, both on workout days and off days, to support my body's amino acid requirements. I actually take them during my workouts when I'm exercising. Amino acids aren't just for people who do strength training. No matter what you do to stay fit, amino acids are essential. Kiana is backed by over 20 years of clinical research and has the highest quality ingredients, no fillers or junk, and undergoes rigorous quality testing. They make essential amino acids available in capsules or powders that you can mix with water, and they taste great. If you want to naturally boost energy, build lean muscle, and enhance athletic performance, get Kiana Aminos. You can save 20% on all subscriptions, which is what I have. Just go to getkion.com/wellfed. That's getkion.com/wellfed to get my fundamental supplements for fitness, Kion Aminos. You are now listening to Well Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Well, welcome, friends. This is the Well Fed Women podcast. It's feeling like episode number 470. 470, that's a big one. Today, our topics will include emotional eating. We're also going to talk about protein powders and do they count towards protein intake, and then what happens when you trigger autoimmune flares every time you work out? A lot of people have negative responses to workouts, whether it be histamine or it triggers an autoimmune flare. So we're just going to kind of discuss that. Also, something new we're going to do today is talk about what's going on in the world of health and fitness. Maybe a little bit on Instagram, things that are new, maybe studies, controversies, things that are causing a ruckus on the internet. So we'll see how this goes. I'm here with Stephanie Ruper today. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I have a spinning pinwheel. But hopefully we're still going to be totally fine. And I'm excited to talk about what's happening in the world of health.
Okay. So the spinning pinwheel, is this something that's on one of your 300-page documents that you have open?
Yeah. 92,244 words. All I did was hit close and it's already saved. It should just quietly recede. That spinning pinwheel, you know, again, Mac users know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would expect nothing less. You're like, I have a few 300 page documents open. I'm like, oh, you have a few, huh? It's like me. I do right now. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18 tabs open.
I just shut all my tabs too. That's how much I love you, audience. That's how much I love you, is I'm willing to close my tabs and my documents for you.
So I'm a tabber. I can't not. I need to have them all open. Right now I have like a Gap cart open. I have some furniture open. I have the YouTube replay of Usher at the Super Bowl because I really wanted to watch it again. So I started watching it and then I like had to stop halfway. I have 2 different tabs open on Instagram. I have 2 different studies about protein that I'm looking into, like 5 different articles. I just don't want to lose my place. And this is, my brain is always in 5 places.
I just shut all mine for you. I felt like I look and there's a few dozen across the screen and they're all different studies, you know, and I just hit the X and said goodbye. Oh. Sometimes when I do that, I'll bookmark all of them and then and never come back to them.
Yeah.
But so anyway, the document is closed. What's happening in the world of health that we're going to discuss?
Okay. So did you look into Ballerina Farm?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. So this woman,
I've got the Insta open.
Okay. So this woman, her name's Hannah Nailman. I've been following her for a really long time. She is a mom of 8. She just had her 8th child in Utah. probably a lot of people listening follow her, but she's just this woman that we all are like, how do you do it all? You know, all these kids, she's got a huge farm. She does a lot of, she makes her own sourdough and like has this really old school wood stove that she is always home, like making all of this stuff from scratch. And also all of a sudden she'll be like delivering a goat and they have this, you know, they wrangle cows and have horses and her kids are all, you know, cowboys. And so it's a really cute Instagram. It's just, it's one of those things that you follow because you're like, wow, that is just something to watch. It's just something interesting to see. She posted, she is Mrs. American. American. Okay. So it's apparent. I don't know much about it, but she competed. She won. So they had a, I'm going to guess it's Mrs. Universe pageant. She had her baby. She posted about it. And then a few days later, she posted a video of her. Now, of course, she's a ballerina. So she's like a very well-trained ballerina, does beautiful, like she'll randomly just do ballet in her house. And she'll like post the videos. So she then a few days later posted an Instagram of like her practicing, doing some movement. And this was literally like 3 or 4 days after giving birth. Then 12 days after giving birth, she posted her at this Mrs. American, as Mrs. American at this Miss Universe pageant. I'm not even sure where the pageant was, if it was in the States. I'm assuming it was because she had a lot of family there. Instantly on this Instagram post, she received a ton of criticism because people are saying, this is totally unrealistic. How are you competing in a pageant 12 days postpartum? A lot of people were like, how dare you? I can't believe you're doing this. Your child is so young. Other people were like, I hope nobody thinks this is realistic. And if you're a mom watching this, don't buy into this. This is not what you need to be doing. And so people were kind of barking at her, tearing her down. Now, I don't think she saw the comments because she just kept posting her stories and what she was doing at this pageant. And I think she probably has more going on than to look in the comments. But I would like to know your feedback or what you think on this, about this.
Well, obviously, pageants are a whole circus.
Right. Yes.
And that's a whole thing that we could discuss on its own. You know, the merits, the pros, the cons, the various mm-hmm. powers at play, the misogyny, the feminism, how they coexist in pageantry. Like, that's a thing. I mean, across society, I guess, misogyny and feminism coexist, right? There are all these, it's often couched in language of like empowering women, like rewarding women for doing this, for being service oriented, for having all of these multi-talented, multi-dimensional facets to their being, like all that kind of stuff. But then of course also there's the body image stuff and the perfect image stuff and the perfect teeth stuff and the competitive stuff and how you need to outcompete other women stuff and the selling stuff. And so there's a whole lot that like exists in that universe that I think is worth unpacking. If this woman wants to do it, like, cool. I can't begrudge people who want to participate in that, most especially if they do it with eyes wide open, right? Like, and if you're honest about what you're going through. So I looked at her Instagram and she does have photos of herself like nursing her child at this event.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And there are photos of her that aren't super makeup-y. They're still nice looking. I imagine that some amount of shading or some amount of filters or something is a part of that. But I don't know. I didn't get the sense that she was saying other people should be like me. And when you're very influential and popular, there's always responsibility in what you say and what you do. At the same time, like, you're just sharing your life. And if this is what her life is, fine. Fine. You know? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's fine. People on social media, people follow what they want to follow and don't follow what they don't want to follow. And I honestly, like, when people get mad at other people for what they share on social media, I just like, I can't. Like, I'm not here for it. We're all responsible for what we share, but it's just honest. And you're allowed to share what your life is like.
Yes. No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think maybe people would. Maybe other people have a different perspective and our initial reaction, I think, sometimes as moms, especially if we've struggled postpartum, is to get mad or feel shame personally if we see somebody doing it better, quote unquote. But I think this situation, this criticism that she is receiving is perfectly shows kind of what's problematic in our personal relationship with social media. We don't need to center ourselves in every post we see on social media. If something somebody is doing on the internet makes you mad or makes you feel bad about yourself or makes you feel discontent, which that's a lot of things. And I think some of us struggle with that from time to time. It's not the fault of the person posting. That is just my opinion. I think she has a lot of help. And if this is what she's choosing to do, I don't fault anybody or have a problem with anybody choosing to do pageants if that's what they want to do and that's what they love. And she obviously won Mrs. American, and that was unexpected. You couldn't necessarily plan for that. But now she has this amazing opportunity. It is in Las Vegas. I just saw the location stamp on the post. But she had this amazing opportunity to compete against all these other women. And this is like something she's really proud of, I'm sure. And she didn't necessarily say, no, I can't do that because I have children. She used her community, you know, her family. A lot of her family was there. And she was able to do it. Now, was she tired and exhausted? Probably. But that, again, that's her choice. So I think if we as a society, you know, if we have a healthy relationship with ourselves and understand that everybody is different and what everybody can achieve is different, we learn not to center ourselves in other people's lives and posts and what they're doing. And I think that that's just what we're going to have to do moving forward, you know, because we're constantly seeing people at different seasons of life, different stages of their life, different communities, different support systems, different like adrenals and thyroid. Like what my adrenals can handle are not going to be what her adrenals can handle, right? And not to say that, you know, the adrenals work differently in different people, but we've said this quite often, which is how your body responds, like how your body responds is unique to you. So if I'm exposing myself to too much stress or chronic stress, my body reacts in a very specific way. For me, it is typically chronic pain. It's tension. It's headaches. Sometimes it's a stomach ache. My stomach will, or my lower GI tract will get disrupted. That's how my body adapts and, you know, expresses stress, or that's what stress starts to do to me. For other people, it may be their thyroid starts to get a little wonky. They're more prone to adrenal dysfunction. Maybe they lose their period quicker. And so it's when we try to say, oh, well, you're doing all this stuff and I am too, but you didn't lose your period and I did. Like, that's a perfect example, right? Because no two people are the same. So I think it's just a healthy place to be. And it's somewhere we have to get. Maybe it's like a nice benefit of aging, but like we have to be able to engage with social media in for our own mental, physical, and emotional health without putting ourselves at the center and making it about us, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people get so mad about, you know, there are so many accounts that I think post content that is like, generally speaking, probably toxic for a lot of people and not conducive to the well-being of individuals and communities. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff that I don't like. If I follow it and if I comment on it, I am supporting its power. Like I just, and so people get so mad and then they keep, at what point do we own that? You know, I think it's so easy to be mad and say things should be different. And my question is only, well, okay, like you be the change you want to see in the world.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Exactly. Yes. No, I couldn't agree more. That is a lot of my problem with some of the social media that's like to tear others down. So instead of like, if your whole platform is picking on people and tearing people down and trying to poke holes in what they're saying, like just be the change. Talk about what is true then to you. Give your opinion. You don't have to just constantly tear other people down. And that unfortunately tends to get some views and likes. And that's just the way our society works. But I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And, you know, that's like, that's catchy, right? Calling people out is, it's sticky. It's emotionally sticky and people's eyes are drawn to it. And then they comment and then they fight. And so, you know, when, if you get drawn into a comment war on somebody's page that you don't like, you are doing exactly what serves you. You're doing something that's opposite to the goal, right? Like you're propping up the thing that you are saying that you don't like. So I don't know. Anyway, so Ballerina Farm, I have, and also like, we have no idea what's going on for this human, you know, and that's a part of why I opened Instagram in private browsing mode. So I wouldn't log on. I haven't logged on in months. I haven't been on social media at all, except for Twitter a little bit in months. And like that's a choice, and we all opt into these things. But the way that people receive content and make so many presumptions about what's going on for you based on, you know, it's impossible. So, you know, just let's get curious and ask some questions instead of like assuming why and how people are doing things and how they feel. Okay, bye.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at her most recent post, and it's like a bunch of eggs, right? And it's all these eggs that she has collected from her own chicken coop, and she's washing them. Because by the way, when you gather eggs from a chicken coop, guess what's all over them? Poop. Okay, so she's washing the eggs. The first comment is, don't wash the eggs. It's not good.
And my goodness.
And then the next comment is, I'm just here for the comments about her trying to kill her children with eggs on IG. I mean, it's just, and then someone said, if I was Hannah, I'd never read a single comment.
Well, yeah. And that's what she's doing. She's just like, and I love that she was at this pageant continuing to post her comments. Who cares what people say? And you need, if you're going to be somebody who shares about your life, you need that resilience because, you know, people are going to come at you. Okay.
Whether you're active, it's hot and humid outside, you are regularly using the sauna, or you follow a whole foods diet, which is naturally low in sodium, you need to be thinking about replacing your electrolytes. This is one of the best ways to build stress resilience and support your adrenals. Electrolytes are minerals. They are like the spark plugs in the body because they're responsible for tens of thousands of reactions. Deficiencies show up as dizziness, muscle cramps, headaches, fatigue, especially if you get dizzy when you go from sitting down or laying down to standing. That's a huge sign that your adrenals need more support, specifically from minerals. One of my favorite ways, in fact, the only way that I like to replace my electrolytes is with Element. I started supplementing with Element after workouts. It made such a huge difference almost immediately in my recovery and how I felt throughout the rest of the day. Element makes grab-and-go electrolyte replacement packs with no sugar, gluten fillers, or artificial ingredients. Just tear open a pack, pour, and stir it into water. I've actually now been mixing it up like half a pack for my kids when they are sick or when they're out doing sports. This is so important for the spring and summer season when kids are out. I always have some on hand. It's in the car. It's in my purse because with sickness, workouts, overall just feeling overwhelmed, burnt out, going back and forth all day, driving around, it makes a huge difference and it's a wonderful pick-me-up. Right now, everyone, including new and current customers, can get a free 8-pack with every order. Element comes in boxes of 30. There's free shipping on all orders. And now all orders get a free 8-pack. To get Element, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed and make sure to use the code wellfed for your free sample 8-pack. That's drinklmnt.com/wellfed.
Okay, so the next topic before we jump into questions, this was something that just came across my feed, which I found pretty profound. It was actually, I follow health because they have shared, I like to just see what kind of stuff other bigger health conglomerates are doing. So I follow, it's just, you know, at health. And they said a new study links heavy metal exposure to earlier menopause. Did you read this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wild.
And I went wild. To their site and read the article and stuff. Is it wild? What's wild about it?
That we actually have studies that show this. I mean, first of all, we never do studies on menopausal women, but to link heavy metal exposure to an earlier menopause, I think is pretty profound. I mean, I'm excited that more people are talking about it. Essentially, the study was middle-aged women with elevated levels of heavy metals are more likely to have depleted ovarian function and egg reserve. So they tested a measure AMH that is usually a marker that shows how many eggs or what kind of reserve we have. And there was, I pulled it out and I highlighted it. I want to find it. It was super interesting. They found that there was a higher, so it was inversely related. So you had a higher heavy metal exposure, high heavy metals detected in your body, the lower the AMH that you had. And there was a stronger association to heavy metals than to smoking. So obviously we have data that shows smoking leads to earlier menopause and less ovarian reserve. It was stronger. In other words, people who had more heavy metals in their body had a stronger relationship to earlier menopause than those who smoked,
That's wild. That's fascinating. You know, anytime we read a study about like associations, there's a few things to keep in mind. One, there's so many variables in play in, say, for example, somebody's ovarian reserves, right? Somebody's menopause. And what researchers try to do, the language that's used is control for variables, right? So you want to try to pull out the effects of other variables to isolate the effect of this one variable. And so researchers use statistics to do things like control for diet, control for location, control for race, control for religion. Like you can control for anything, right? You pull a statistic mm-hmm. out and you do some manipulation with the numbers. And then you try to like, quote unquote, they don't use the language of purity, but they try to like pull out, purify the data set so that you can see the effect of this one thing. And so whenever I read a study like this, my first thought is like, how well are they controlling their variables? Probably pretty well. It's impossible to do it perfectly, you know, and that's just what statistic is. And so when Noelle is saying it's got a stronger association, what they're doing is like pulling as many variables as they can out of the equation and comparing what seems to be heavy metal toxicity versus smoking. But there's always stuff at play. And one of the biggest things that's at play is stress. You can't really control for stress. And like financial stability and all this kind of stuff is really hard to control for. And so you see in a lot of studies, like associations, say, for example, like people live under power lines, right? You're not necessarily able to control for that unless that's what you're specifically looking for. And then they're of lesser health, they have greater reactive oxygen species in their bodies, like all this kind of stuff. And same thing for diet. And then like, what are you controlling for in the diet? All of which is to say, it's very complicated, but this still seems to like be a thing. It still seems to be a thing. And they suggest, and I think they're probably right, that the reason it's associated is because of its effect on these reactive oxygen species in the body, right? And so also reading this study, I think, wow, that's really, really important. And what are all the ways that I can help with my oxidative stress in my body? Heavy metal toxicity is one of them, but it's not the only one, right? Smoking, exercise, light exposure. By light exposure, I mean like circadian rhythm. Like there's so much we can do, right? Mm-hmm, so I just read this and I'm like, okay, this is one thing. What can I do about it? And they suggest like filtering water. What else do they suggest? Don't eat big fish. Oh, they did say don't eat organ meats, which I thought was very interesting. Did you see that?
No, but I wouldn't expect anything less. They're like, stop eating meat.
And then they say like, don't eat vegetables that are exposed to heavy metals. And you're like, well, crap, how do I know? You know, I mean, I want to eat organic, like, I suppose, you know, so it's just, it's very interesting.
Truthfully, what they should have recommended, if you're actually going to go based on what we know about heavy metals in food, you should say, don't eat any more dark chocolate. Stop drinking coffee. Okay. And buy rice that is, you know, organic, biodynamic in nature, although it is pretty rich in, I mean, you're going to have, I just feel like it's a struggle. So heavy metals, so the ones that they were tested, they basically tested urine and then they looked at ovarian reserve. It was cadmium, mercury, and arsenic were the ones, the highest levels in the urine. I feel like contamination is a part of our life. There is higher contamination in things that are going to be processed. All of that contamination typically happens through processing, shipping containers, sorting machines, all that kind of stuff. And so anytime we're importing things, especially with coffee and chocolate, that is going to be pretty high in heavy metals. If a company is using and not sourcing their ingredients properly, especially in color cosmetics, that can be largely contaminated. So contamination is a part of life. However, it's unregulated. So we can do a lot. Of course, filtering your drinking water is paramount. Like, yes, number one. And I think that's something easy we can do. Obviously, filtering the house. I have an air filter now in every home. It took a few years to get there, but or in every room. But now that's what we do. And that's, again, reducing our overall toxic load. There is going to be contamination that we can't control. So what can we do is support our body's ability to properly detoxify and get rid of those things. And we also buy from companies that we know proactively tests for contaminants so that they can actually pick up on when things have higher than normal levels and source properly. And, you know, it's interesting because I just saw on Instagram somebody say, oh, what are the biggest myths in the fitness industry? And one of the things he said is any organic foods. And I was like, really, dude? Like as much data that we have now on like PFAS and contamination and what pesticides do and how they're endocrine disruptors and carcinogens, like, don't you think like less exposure, the better? I don't know. But I mean, I'm not saying you have to eat organic all the time, but it's not a myth. Like we have data about it. So it's making smarter decisions, but also supporting our body's ability to properly detoxify, which that gets into a whole thing of how do we support the liver and how do we, you know, reduce our overall stress so that our body is not inhibited in its detoxification processes. But yeah. Okay. Anything else from you before we jump into questions?
No, I like your response. You know,
fantastic. I like your response. Question number one is from Tone J. Hornseth. Okay. I struggle with emotional eating. My stress response is to want to eat chocolate. What do I do about this? Did you ever struggle with emotional eating?
Speaking of chocolate, did I? I do. Every day.
Currently.
Right. Yeah, I do. I mean, what I am is aware of the fact that when I'm low in energy, low in willpower, like when I'm low in energy and when I'm tired at the end of the day, like when I'm exhausted, like I just want to sit and eat.
Rightly so.
Like I'm aware of that. That used to be really heavy and a big struggle for me because I would want to, and then I would be like, no, you can't eat. And then I would like eat, and then I would try not to eat. And it became this like back and forth, right? It was a wrestle. And now I'm like, okay, I'm tired. I want to sit down and eat it like a huge bowl of yogurt and cereal. And then like, and then I have some, but it's fine because I'm not trying to not eat more, then I feel less like that. So it's fine. So my point is like, yes, emotional eating in that sense, you know, and I do a lot of, probably the most coping I do in my life is for against loneliness, and food is a part of that. That's not the only thing, you know, but we all kind of have things that we reach for when we're not feeling our best. You know, a lot of people watch TV, turn off some, you know, some people drink, some people exercise a ton. I guess that's part of my fabric too. You know, there's all kinds of things that we reach for when our buttons or our vulnerabilities are pressed. And that's just, it's different for everybody. I think for a lot of people, thinking about your body sizes is a really big factor of that because we intrinsically in our head associate body size with how much I'm eating. And so as soon as you have some kind of thought like, oh, my body doesn't look the way I would like, yada, 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 then there's the instinctive response of, oh, I should eat less. And then, of course, the response of, well, I want to eat more because I feel like I can't eat more. Right. So it becomes this whole cycle that Noelle and I have been talking about for a very long time, which is like, you know, you fall into the pattern, I once called binging and then restricting and then binging and restricting. And you think the way out of it is to like, one might think the way out of it is just to like restrict, restrict, restrict until you've done it enough. It's the opposite. And so really talking about emotional eating, somebody I really, really respect spends much of their life just attending to like really getting going deep with what hurts, what's hurting you. You know, that's like, that's it. If you're emotional eating, you know, that sentence, like, I'm emotional eating. I'm emotional. I'm going to put the period there and be like, okay, wait, cool. Like, go ahead and eat while you're doing that, or after or before, or whenever is most conducive to your flourishing. What's that feeling coming from? And can you soften it? Can you address it? Can you, you know, heal? Is that a word we want to use? Can you heal what's driving it? What's making you feel that way? Because once you do, then maybe you still kind of want to eat, but also like the feeling isn't that strong, which is kind of what I was saying for myself. Like, I experience food as comforting. It's a source of dopamine. It tastes great. Like, why not? But I don't have this like really intense relationship anymore because I've gone deep with what was driving that in the first place.
Yeah, I think that is, it's interesting. You did a great job of explaining, okay, there's an emotion and we're trying to cope, and this is the way that we choose to cope. So can there be other more healthy ways of dealing with those emotions? Absolutely. And that can be, you know, worked on with a therapist or explored for sure with a professional. However, I think trying to separate the fact that we shouldn't be eating when we're emotional is like, it doesn't work, because we are emotional beings. And typically,
yeah,
we're going to be eating when we have emotion, and that's normal. Like, we've definitely demonized that. What I think is what we're all trying to maybe solve or reduce is eating to cover up emotion. So eating to mask emotions and mask feelings. And so then, you know, Steph described that perfectly, which is, okay, let's figure out what emotions we're trying to mask, what we're trying not to feel, and how can we solve those in other ways. Interestingly enough, all acts of eating, it's also a misnomer that like, oh, eating sugar increases dopamine and that's why we want it. All acts of eating increase dopamine. It's not just, obviously, there's certain foods that are more appealing and have more, that drive us more and give us a bigger dose, but all foods do increase dopamine. So when you have something that increases dopamine and makes you feel a little happier, again, it's hard to separate emotion from that. And I don't think that needs to be something that you're always trying to solve. One of the things that the last thing I'll just mention quickly is that I find that a lot of people's emotional eating is typically sometimes, and not all the time, and it may not be in your case, but I find that a lot of times people are like, I'm an emotional eater, and it's because they're under eating. And so they feel this strong draw to food to solve problems. And when your body is chronically underfed, which I feel like a lot of women, especially millennial women, have dealt with, we think we need, there's always like this like point that we think we need to be. Oh, we need to eat less. It's always better to eat less. And I don't want to eat beyond my hunger, and I don't want to eat beyond what I need. And so we are always, even if you've done the work and you're on the other side of it and you feel like you have a healthier relationship with food, there is always this sort of restrictive, I think, underlying restrictive feeling that a lot of women have, especially if you grew up in the 90s and early 2000s and it was all about being smaller and eating less and restricting your calories and 1,200 calories a day. So if you're chronically underfed, your body is going to crave food, and it's going to feel, sometimes it's going to feel like you're out of control. And so when I was in my early 20s, this was me. I thought, I've got to figure out this emotional eating thing. You know, I remember getting a book and a workbook on emotional eating. And looking back, and I remember I did the book and it did nothing for me. I was like, why can't I stop eating? It's like, because you're starving yourself. And it wouldn't feel like, you know, to the person that's going through it, it feels like, well, I'm eating 2 eggs for breakfast and I don't have any snacks. I'm eating a decent lunch and then I'm eating dinner, but then I can't stop after dinner. It's like, because you had literally 500 to 700 calories and you're trying to work out. And of course your body's going to be like, I need freaking food. And excellent so then it's point. Like, I need to eat more. And your body goes for things that you you think is bad, like the almond butter or the fattier food, like, oh, I can't eat that. And then of course your body's like, I need that, because you're on this cycle of restrict, and then I can't handle it anymore. I have to eat. So just be clear that that's not it, that you are feeding yourself well, that you're going for protein. I think we are largely a generation that is deficient in protein, or our protein intake is far too small. Studies actually show most adults are already is like grossly deficient in what you actually need, especially what the science is showing. And most people aren't even reaching that. And so when we are able to eat more protein, especially in the morning, but throughout the day we do, it reduces our need for snacking and cravings and stuff like that. So it might be worth it just to experiment with that. Now, I love a good chocolate. And so I eat my chocolate at the same time every day. It's like a post-lunch thing for me. And I eat like a few squares of a dark chocolate bar. So like, don't try to restrict it. But, you know, you can also have dark chocolate and enjoy it. I'm not saying that's the problem. And just make sure you're getting good dark chocolate that you like.
If you want to give yourself a leg up with all the sicknesses still going around, D3 can help. After doing a ton of research, in addition to taking other immune supportive supplements like probiotics and beta-glucan, I'm taking vitamin D and K2 again daily. Specifically, I'm taking MD Logic's vitamin D3 with K2, which contains two different forms of K2, known as MK4 and MK7. They both have different benefits. So MK4 has been shown to promote healthy bone density and maintain strong bones, while MK7 is more bioavailable. It's also emulsified in olive oil, not vegetable oils. Even with a diet rich in vitamin D, most people, including myself, trend low in vitamin D. Approximately 42% of the U.S. population is deficient in vitamin D. And study upon study shows that vitamin D supplementation effectively prevents respiratory tract infections. Supplementation is also associated with fewer colds, and it also protects against major chronic diseases. When supplementing with vitamin D, it's crucial that you take it with K2. This ensures that calcium transported via vitamin D is absorbed by your bones rather than accumulating in deposits in your arteries. And unfortunately, most vitamin D supplements on the market do not contain K2. To get my favorite high-quality vitamin D3 with K2 that's tested for contaminants, go to mdlogichealth.com/D3. Use coupon code WELLFED for 10% off, or subscribe and save. You can get 3 bottles every 3 months for 15% off. That's MD Logic, LOGIC, Health, HEALTH.com/D3. Use coupon code WELLFED for 10% off, and you'll always get free shipping on orders of $50 or more.
Yeah, something that I think that's so important, and thank you for sharing that. I will say, you know, for me, the wanting to not eat too much, whatever that is for anybody. For me, it's like when I feel my blood sugar crash, or I get really dehydrated because I've had like too much of anything and my liver's working overtime or whatever, you know, like we all have an amount, right, where we eat, and then it gets uncomfortable, or it creates like a state in our bodies that we don't love, like cool. And so I don't like softening around that. I think eating more in general is a great way to do that. Go ahead and eat, you know, eat your, like, no, I don't want to be like, eat your feelings, but like, you know, just be cognizant and also like address the thing, because things are things, and addressing them normally helps us in a whole bunch of ways, not just this way. I might also suggest that, you know, if you really feel like you want to eat chocolate, like go ahead and eat it. If it doesn't, like, you know, if it doesn't hurt, if it doesn't bother you, gives me headaches, I can't, chocolate's not my thing. You could also soften around it by like eating some like other things with it, or having like a chocolate flavored yogurt. You know, you could mix it up, because maybe like if you eat plain chocolate, it's a blood sugar thing, right? But if you mix it up a little bit, then it could, I don't know, you could create feelings of fullness without just a thought.
Yeah.
Know? Anyway.
Agreed. This is question number 2 is from Liz Owl 16. Does protein powder count towards protein intake or just whole foods?
Yes. It does. If you are really specifically trying to consume specific amino acids, right? Protein is a bucket term for a whole bunch of different amino acids. If you're really trying to consume a certain ratio of certain amino acids, you're going to want to dive into like what kind of protein powder you're consuming and other kinds of protein you're consuming and making sure that you're getting a complete amino acid profile. And I'm a really big fan of eating complete proteins. Animal proteins are complete. Plant proteins typically do not offer all of the amino acids that you need in your diet, except for quinoa. Are there any other plant? Soy. Soy is a complete protein.
Yeah.
So that's it. Like, you want to be sure that you're rounding out that amino acid profile. So I wouldn't make your whole diet protein powders unless, of course, you get real intentional about what's in those protein powders and make sure that you're getting your complete amino acid profile. But otherwise, go for it. If that's how you're going to be able to get your protein or part of your protein, I wouldn't make it the whole protein intake. That's it for me.
I'm definitely not against protein powders. I don't think it should be the majority of your protein intake. I think it's like a little topper. And so as long as we consider it that, but protein powders are literally just processed, pulverized sources of protein. So you can get grass-fed beef isolate. That is what I have. You can have like a whey protein powder, which is bioavailable. There are plant protein powders out there, but a lot of them are not, some of them are not complete sources of protein. So in other words, it doesn't have all 9 amino acids. One of the things that I think people get their panties in a bunch about is the whole collagen protein powder thing. So I just want to make a note about that. Collagen is a protein. It's a major component of bone, skin, muscle, tissues, and cartilage. I think it serves an incredible purpose. It's not a complete protein, however. So it contains 8 of the 9 essential amino acids. So it's lacking tryptophan. The problem with incomplete proteins is if all of your sources of protein are incomplete, you need all protein, just like all food has protein and fat and carbohydrate. Like if you look at a grain, like a quinoa, the majority of the food is carbohydrate. It does have a little bit of protein. It does have a little bit of fat, but the majority of the food is carbohydrate. But to say that it's a carb is not saying it doesn't have fat or protein, right? So if you look at collagen, it's got 8 of the 9. Okay. That is, it's enriched in 8 of the 9. That doesn't mean it contains no tryptophan. It just doesn't have a decent amount of it. So you can eat other foods that have tryptophan, like chicken or fish or whatever, or, you know, meats. And that would be great. That helps you make up for that lost tryptophan. That's why bioavailable and complete protein sources are so important, because if you're getting all your main protein from incomplete proteins, you're going to be deficient in certain essential amino acids, and that can inhibit muscle protein synthesis and all that stuff. So everybody wants to know, does collagen count towards your protein goals? A lot of people say no. And I've looked into this quite a bit, and I just can't get on that boat. I do think collagen counts. It is a protein. Yes, it lacks one of the essential amino acids, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't count towards your goals. Now, you do not want to take collagen post-workout for sure, because that's not a complete protein source. It's not going to initiate and help promote muscle protein synthesis. So you want always a complete source of protein post-workout, because we want to take advantage of that muscle growth period, muscle protein synthesis, all that stuff. But you can take a little collagen as part of your breakfast, and I believe it counts. I don't think you should be taking 30 grams of collagen protein powder, but most protein powder collagen peptides do not have 30 grams of protein in one scoop. The clinical dose is anywhere between 2.5 grams and like 15 grams of protein. So most people, I think, could probably be fine with just like 5 grams of protein worth of collagen, between 5 to 10 grams. I think it counts. There was a 2019 study that found it does count towards total protein intake. I can link to that in the show notes. It said, as long as there's a balance of other amino acids and bioavailable protein sources in the diet. So don't take it post-workout, but I think it counts towards your protein intake and protein goals. That's just my thoughts. So last question is from Zoe Tries. How to work out when every time you do, it triggers an autoimmune flare.
I love that you figured out that's infer that that's a Zoe Tries. That's cool. Exercise is funny because it can help with a lot of things. And also, though, it can release vasodilators, stimulate a histamine response, stimulate cortisol, stimulate adrenaline, stimulate blood sugar, like all this kind of stuff happens. And it's like, it's conducive to your flourishing, generally speaking, probably for most people, but can be tricky. I would not be able to develop any kind of expertise about autoimmune conditions in a way that I would feel licensed to tell you what is best on this score. I can speak from my own experience that, you know, I think a lot of what we do in our culture is sort of start from what's presumed normal or good, and it's a lot. And then we view anything less than that as a lack, as some kind of a deficiency, like, oh, I have to step down from a full workout routine. But instead, maybe think about it as like starting from zero and what am I adding, right? Like I'm starting from, like, I'm a sloth, I'm a slug, I'm a snail, you know, and then what do I add? And like medium term or long term, slow and gentle, walking, very light aerobics. You can find some like jazzercise-y kind of stuff on YouTube, and pay attention to your level of autonomic arousal. How fast are you breathing? Are you sweating? Pay attention to that. And then, you know, kind of note how you feel afterwards, because how much you're breathing, how hard you're working, how much you're sweating is a marker for how much your body is being stimulated. You can kind of use that to then, like, when you're done, see if there's been kind of a flare. And if there has, dial it back, you know. And I'm putting it this way because I don't want to say, well, do 20 minutes or do 30 minutes or do this, because I don't know what your bar is, you know, what's standard for you. But I suggest, like, really dialing into that. And that's something that I was doing and have been doing with my experience with these, like, the intensification of my headaches that I experienced recently, was really dialing into, like, if you're sweating, like, you're getting rid of electrolytes, you're getting rid of water, you're going to want to pay attention to that, right? If you're breathing real heavy, then your adrenaline and your cortisol are probably up, and you're going to want to pay attention to that. You're going to either want to make sure that you, like, eat right away when you're done, that you calm down, that you do some deep breathing afterwards, or you just stop doing that kind of activity, whatever's, you know, best for you. So I would pay attention to that. And if you want to lift, you can lift, but just do less, just do less. 10 minutes instead of 30, you know, get to that point where you kind of start breathing heavy, you kind of start sweating, and then stop, right? And this is a way to sort of personalize for anybody who's dealing with any kind of adrenal stress, autoimmune, whatever, with your workouts. I don't know. It's been working for me.
Yeah, no, that's really smart. I think what we're missing here is context of what constitutes a workout for you. And a lot of us have gotten into the mindset that we have to be pushing ourselves, sweating hard, you know, doing an all out effort, whatever. And that's what a workout is. And that's not necessarily what it is. I was sick the last week and a half, 2 weeks. I didn't work out. So I started just by doing PT work, never worked up a sweat. I did some band stuff. Anybody can do band stuff. Anybody. You can do personal. I mean, we call it PT, right? We call it physical therapy, but it really is just activation. Strength and activation is going to set you up for success for the rest of your life. If you're unable to activate properly your glutes or even your core, you're not going to be able to properly climb steps as you age. You're not going to be able to sit down and get up off the floor. So it doesn't matter what condition you have. If you're in, you know, pain all the time, physical therapy can and will help, even if it doesn't immediately solve what your problem is. So that's where I would start. You could even look at like a postpartum program, something that is, okay, let's get you started from zero, working to learn proper activation again, core training, all that kind of stuff. And it's, again, you're not going to be working up a sweat. Your heart rate's not going to be getting, you know, you might get slightly elevated, but it's not going to get super high. I would work on that. And then, of course, incorporate walking so that you're doing it out in the sun, you're getting some sun on your face, and you're getting some fresh air, and do some band work and walking until you're able to manage these flares. So there's some reason that your immune system is so sensitive to flares. And we've got to rebalance the immune system. So something else is off with your physiology. I don't even know what the autoimmune condition is, but I would say that you're in a season of instability. You're in a season of imbalance. And so what can you do to bring back balance into your life and into your with your immune system? So is it sleeping more, making sure that you're focused on that? Is it reducing blue light exposure, stepping away from the phone, you know, working with a qualified practitioner to see what's your nutrient status and are you deficient in certain things? Are you mineral deficient? Are you focusing on replenishing your electrolytes? What's your adrenal status? Are your adrenals completely tapped out? So bringing back balance and nutrients into the body so that you can have more resilience, I think, is priority number one. And then while you're working out and doing things, start at zero. Start with basic band movements and then work your way up into walking, maybe walking a little bit faster, and just experiment with what can I handle? Can I do a little bit more? Can I actually pick up a 10-pound dumbbell and do some bicep curls? Like, what does that do for me? So again, change your perception of what working out is, but then also proactively work on bringing balance to the immune system so that you're not constantly on the verge of a flare.
So yes. Something that I'm focusing on, maybe I mentioned this in recent weeks, is resilience. And for me, that means preparedness ahead of time. You know, before I walk out the door, it's like, am I pain-free right now? What can I do to make sure that I don't trip into it, right? Like, how can I prepare myself? We so often like get ourselves up to what we can tolerate. Like, yeah, every day, it's like, how much crap can I tolerate? How much crap can I put myself through and tolerate today? It's like, oh, hang on. let's ask a different question. Like, how can I live my life such that, like, A, I'm not putting myself through crap, and B, like, I'm giving myself the health I need to get through what's going to come my way as best as I'm able.
Love it. Anything else from you, Stefanie?
Nope.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
For more from Stefanie, are you still on the X?
I am. Yeah, I post here and there.
Okay, so it's at Stefanie Ruper, right?
Yep, that's me.
Okay, and for more from me, it's at Coconuts and Kettlebells on the Insta. Thanks for being here, guys. We will talk to you next week.